Environment to order. This is the 11th of May. Got that one today?
Yeah.
At least I got May.
I know this.
All righty. The 10th of May, and we are going to first hear a Senate Bill 42. Call that into being staff report.
Mr. Chair, this is just a reminder. Each of the bills we have on our agenda today, we've heard previously. Senate Bill 42 would give the Environmental Quality Commission the flexibility to extend the maximum loan period for water pollution control revolving fund loans. The current law provides that it shall be 20 years, and what this bill does, it says 20 years after the completion date of the project for which the loan is issued. Because there are some situations that have emerged where an entity is building something, and that project in and of itself is designed to provide the revenue to repay the loan. And so that revenue doesn't begin to be generated until after the project is finished. So this would give the Department of Environmental Quality the opportunity or the flexibility to provide that the term of the loan would not be initiated until after the completion of the project.
Okay, very good. Any discussion? Representative Barnard.
Are we in work session?
In hearing right now.
Oh, okay.
Any objections? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 42. Representative Barnard.
Mr. Chair, is it appropriate to make a motion at this time?
Certainly.
I would move that we pass House Bill 42 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I think I said House Bill. I meant Senate Bill.
Senate Bill 42.
42.
With a do-pass.
Yes,
all right.
And I'd like to speak to that, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. I think this is a pretty fairly simple bill that simply extends the time to the time that a local, mostly municipalities with that are run on shoestrings, will actually can begin repaying a loan at the time when they start receiving fees for treatment. I have a number of small towns in my district or immediately adjacent to my district, all of whom are in one form or another faced with the problem of trying to reduce pollution going into our streams and ultimately into the Willamette River. So anything we can do that makes it a little bit easier for these small towns to do what they need to do and also to keep the fees down that they're having to charge, because these fees are enormous to the ratepayer, we need to do. So I'm a strong supporter of Senate Bill 42.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? All right. Hearing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Barnard.
Aye.
Representative Barnard.
Aye.
Representative
Nolan.
Excused.
Chair Anderson.
Chair Anderson votes aye. The Senate Bill 42, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed.
I put
that on the consent calendar.
I would move to put it on the consent calendar.
All right. Any objections? So ordered. All right. I'll open a brief hearing on Senate Bill 43A. The staff report.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, this is a bill that represents the total sum of the work of a special stakeholder work group that worked during the previous interim to examine the toxic use and hazardous waste reduction statutes. These statutes hadn't been looked at in a period of time, and this work group came to consensus over certain changes in the law. For example, it replaces an annual reporting requirement with a one-time implementation summary. It excludes certain kinds of hazardous waste resulting from, for example, remedial actions or one-time events. It allows the EQC, the Environmental Quality Commission, to change threshold requirements for certain types of wastes based on changes in federal regulation. It allows DEQ to assess a civil penalty if a toxic user fails to develop an adequate plan, system, or summary under the provisions of the bill. We heard testimony on the bill from DEQ, from the American Electronics Association, and from the Northwest Paper, Pulp and Paper Association, all in support of the bill.
Okay. I would like to hear from the department, maybe one person, and also one from maybe Jim, in relationship to the fine. Just come and give us a little briefing as to... $500 a day is a wallop in the pocket.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll go first if that's okay. I'm Bob Danker with the Department of Environmental Quality, and the committee administrator was correct. We had an interim work group talk through all the issues that are in the bill. When it comes to the civil penalty requirement, under the old law that was passed in 1989, there was a public hearing requirement to enforce the law when someone did not complete a plan. And the intent was that DEQ would hold this big public hearing and try to shame the person into doing the right thing. And we never felt comfortable in doing that, and it's really a very awkward process. And the group thought that this should be part of any other requirement, and there should be a penalty at the end of a process. And if you read the bill before you, there's several steps that we'd have to go through working with the person before we got to the point of even having the ability to do a civil penalty. Also note that in most of the hazardous waste regulations that we administer, the penalty is actually up to a maximum of $10,000 a day. The work group didn't think that was appropriate for this type of work, so that's why you see the $500 a day.
Okay, great. Thank you. Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven with the American Electronics Association, a participant in the task force during the last interim. I just want to echo what Mr. Danko said and read just a couple words from Section 8. Basically, you have this mandate to do planning. The department's not going to tell a company the details of what you have to do. It's you have to take a look at your chemical use. You have to take a look at your waste streams. And by and large, when companies do that, they find sensible, cost-effective changes to make. And DEQ provides technical assistance to help them do that. And basically, the phrase is they'll specify a reasonable time frame to bring in a better plan, and they'll provide technical assistance to help you do the better plan. And then if they still don't like what you do, you get another bite at the apple to make further modifications to the plan. I mean, basically it comes down to the end, if somebody just totally stiffs the agency and says, I'm not going to do anything, you could get into the realm of civil penalties, but we think it's pretty reasonable. People get multiple bites at the apple, and they also get help doing the plan in the first place, so we thought this was a reasonable provision.
Great. Your work group was a pretty diverse and pretty large group. Were there any people that were against your final decisions, or was it pretty unanimous?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, as I recall, it was consensus. I don't recall that we even took a formal vote at the end of the process. And just to add, I think on the House side, and when we had the hearing back in February on this bill, I believe the Oregon Environmental Council also spoke in favor of the bill. I know for sure they did in the Senate side. Matt Blevins was just here in the room and had to leave. I think they testified in the public hearing. Maybe they, I'm not sure, but I know they testified on the Senate side, and they do support the bill, as well as AOI and AEA and DEQ, and we're not aware of any opposition.
Great. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Partner.
Thank you. Who was the leader of this group? Who brokered it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it was convened by the staff at DEQ. A gentleman named Dave Livengood was actually the staff person. I don't recall that we appointed a chair. We were our goal was to try to come up with a consensus recommendation. That's what we did. We did meet at DEQ headquarters just because they had the room, but there were 12, 14, 15 formal members of the group. It was a lively group.
Congratulations for such a diverse group being able to reach a general agreement. That's a very good sign.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I do commend DEQ's willingness to convene this, to take a look. I think it's always valuable and useful. I mean, we worked on, Bob and I are like the only people still standing who worked on this bill in 1989, and our hair was different color then. But you know, I think it's always a good idea to take a look at a law, particularly when it's getting on to be 15 years old, and to say, you know, what was then is then, what's now is now, and if you can make changes and people can agree, it's always a good idea to do so. So I think it's you could call this bill regulatory reform or a second look, but you know, I think it does fit into sort of a theme of this session of taking a second look at certain government regulations, and when people can come to a mind to fix them, let's fix them. So.
Very good. Thank you much. Any other questions?
Yes, Senator Lim. I meant that here is a different color than used to be. Is it better than none?
It used to be all gray. And now.
I'll second that. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Whoa.
Not just yet, I guess.
We're back.
That's double.
I just concerned section 6-4A, intoxic substance, which the toxic user reports as a large user. Explain to me what we're trying to do here. I understood before we had defined as 10,000 pounds a year, and I'm not sure I understand what we're trying to do with this section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, can you give a page and line number?
That's page 5.
21.
And line number 21. Okay. And that would carry on, I suppose, to 25, too. But the 21, if you can explain that, I probably understand the rest of it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I'll answer that. And you can follow me if you'd like. One of the objectives in the work group was to match our state law to the federal requirements, because under the federal requirements, their thresholds were different than ours, and it led to confusion with our businesses determining when they had to do a toxic use reduction plan. And so this language matches it up. It says reports as a large user, and if you look back to the definition of large user, which is on page 2, line 12, it defines it as what the federal requirements are. So it kind of matches it directly.
Thank you. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I believe we're in work session. I'll accept the motion. We're in work session. Yeah. Representative Greer.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 43-8 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any objections? Any discussion? Hearing none, clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
President Gerard.
Aye.
President Barnhart.
Aye.
President Jensen.
Aye.
President Nolan.
Excused.
President Blaine.
Aye.
Chair Anderson.
Chair votes aye. The Senate
Chair.
Bill.
I pull the consent calendar.
Okay. This 43A is moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And yes?
The consent calendar may very well be the right idea, but given the kind of topic it is, it might be worthwhile having a carrier who just sort of explains quickly that everybody concurred in the thing and that it came out that way. I don't have a strong feeling about it.
But you kind of would like to carry it, wouldn't you?
Well, not particularly. Although I would.
I haven't seen much activity over here, so I'll declare it duly passed and assign the carriership to yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I will now open a work session on Senate Bill 66. Staff report, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a bill that would add federally recognized Indian tribes to the list of entities eligible to receive funding for park and recreation programs from the State Parks and Recreation Department. It would also require that the department adopt rules establishing standards for the distribution of such funds to those tribes.
Okay. Anyone in the audience would like to speak on this? All right. Hearing none, I will ask for any objections. Councilor Gray.
Mr. Chair, I will oppose this bill in that we're using taxpayer money to give to the tribes who will turn around, buy, purchase property, and then charge the same taxpayer for use of that property.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I also have some concerns along the same line as Mr. Garrard, Representative Garrard has on this. And I had a question here, but I don't see one from the reservation. Reservations. I'm curious about the taxes that is paid on reservation land that are owned by non-Indian. What the status of those might be.
Do you want him to come up?
If he can explain it to me, I'd be happy to listen.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Confederate Tribes of the Umatilla, one of the tribes that is interested in passage of this. And I was outside when whatever the information is you were seeking came up. So,
question from Representative Jensen.
Roger, I have a concern, an issue about what the status of taxes is on land that is located in the reservation that is owned by non-Indians.
Which is the case with about a half of the Umatilla Indian
Which
reservation.
Which is the case with about half of the Umatilla reservation.
And as I understand it, that half, the ownership is with individuals. They do pay a property tax. But I don't want to say with certainty how much. I think I will get you that information. But I can't say with certainty. I don't want to misstate myself.
And that would be paid, in your mind, to the state or to the sovereign nation?
To the county.
County, good.
In the way of property taxes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I think we have maybe a little bit more contact to do and some information coming, so I'll close the work session and we'll hear this near future. Open a work session on Senate Bill 68 and ask for the staff report.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 68 has two purposes. The first would be to allow the State Parks and Recreation Department to issue permits for the operation of Class 1 all-terrain vehicles on the ocean shore for specific purposes. These purposes would include uses by persons with disabilities, emergency response or emergency aid workers, or biologists, wildlife monitors, or other natural resource workers or researchers. The second element of the bill would allow the department to issue permits for pipelines, cable lines, or other conduits across state recreation areas. And there are representatives from the Parks Department here if we have any questions.
Excellent, and I would like to have you come forward.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Tim Wood, Director of the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Great. Tim, I certainly can understand the permits to cross the beach with the emergency-type vehicles. Explain to us again a little bit the background on why all-terrain just regular little go-karts can't be used on the beach.
Mr. Chair, did you say
you're asking that they
can't be currently or should be? I didn't.
Well, as I understand it, you're saying they only the emergency vehicles will really be allowed in some areas of the beach.
Yes, Mr. Chair, currently the regulations regarding vehicle operation on the ocean shore there are certain areas of the ocean shore which are open to vehicle driving. And only vehicles which are street legal under the definition of the Division of Motor Vehicles are authorized to use those portions of the beach. What this bill does is it would allow disabled folks an opportunity to be able to get onto the beach and use the beach with the Class 1 ATV, which is a non-street legal vehicle as defined by DMV. So it's providing them an opportunity to have access to the beach. We would adopt rules, or our commission would adopt rules to manage this, and most likely those rules would be adopted to just restrict that use to the area of the beach which is currently open to driving, so it wouldn't expand the areas of the beach that are open to driving.
Okay, great. Any questions? Representative Jensen first, then Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We went through this, not with Parks and Recreations, but went through this whole issue with these all-terrain vehicles and their use a couple of sessions ago, as memory is holding, reminding me. We're talking about here using this, allowing the use for individuals with disabilities, but as I'm recalling, and I'm recalling the discussions about the all-terrain vehicles at that time, that they were, even individuals with disabilities were basically not allowed the use of these all-terrain vehicles on any kind of state road or roads, and I'm wondering if you know. I'm concerned, Mr. Chair, about and I don't remember everything that took place at that time and all the issues that were involved. And maybe that's what the representative of Klamath Falls is going to be concerned about or issue. And I just feel like I need some more.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 1 and under section 3, we did have a discussion in a previous public hearing in regards to the permits issued and whether there would be a charge for those permits. And the answer we got on March 8th was probably they would not charge. But yet it's still in the bill giving the agency complete control over what the fee would be and the renewal period, the manner in which the permit had to be displayed, which isn't that big a deal. But I think the fee is still in the bill, and there was a general feeling by some members of the committee that if you're permitting scientists to go on the beach as well as disabled people, that you should charge the same. And we did not have any guarantee from the agency at that time that scientists would be charged a fee. So I know that's part of my question.
Would you like to respond to that, Mr. Wood?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, the bill hasn't been amended since you heard it the last time, but It would be my recommendation to our commission that we don't charge a fee for this purpose, for disabled or for the research and emergency purposes. Our commission would have to adopt those rules, but that would be my recommendation to them.
Follow, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
I'm sorry. Do you want? I mean, this bill is ready to move to the House floor, and it has no amendment. Where are you going to change that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, I guess if the committee were to entertain an amendment to this to make it a no-fee permit, the department wouldn't object to that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Lim.
Okay, and page one, individual with disabilities. How many licensees of disabilities they can drive around? How many are there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I don't know that number, but the definition that's used here is the definition that's used by ODOT, or I'm sorry, DMV, as they issue the disabled vehicle placards. I think it's reasonable to assume that the number of people that would apply for one of these would be a very small subset of that, because first of all, they have to have an ATV to use and also access to the beach. So I don't know the number, but it's certainly a small subset of the total number of disabled permits that would be issued by DMV.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I understand there are quite a few people that under the name of a disabled parents or someone else, they are just driving around the park in the disabled parking area. But those healthy good people, they have what is that?
Blue card, disabled.
Blue card, and they might be driving around. And how could we prevent that? Some people, young people driving around, others just watching it, they couldn't. This looked like some form of disparity in my opinion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, it's certainly possible that people would have the permit that weren't entitled to the full benefit of that permit. I mean, it would be our goal as we reviewed the permit application of the individual and verified their issuance of that placard from DMV that they were representing the person that was on that permit. We also would. I think that's also part of the reason why we have a renewal period, is so that we can renew those periodically and review them to be sure that the folks that are entitled to it are the ones to whom it is issued.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And you mentioned it's not all beach area, but certain areas. And what's the difference instead of accessing all areas in a certain limited areas they can drive?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Commission has the authority to establish which portions of the beach would be open for vehicle driving and which portions should be closed. And I don't know the full history of this, but it's been some time since the Parks and Recreation Commission reviewed sort of vehicle usage on the beach and where that was a primary activity and other areas that it shouldn't be. In terms of best protecting the resources and providing opportunities for undisturbed recreation, those areas shouldn't be open to the beach. Also, in conjunction with comments of the local governments, counties, and cities that exist along the beach. And so they adopted certain sections of the beach that would be open and certain sections of the beach that would be closed. And that's how that has been determined. There hasn't, since I've been with the department about 8 years, there hasn't been any action taken by our commission that would have changed what's in effect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll stand at ease for a moment.
Fine, Mr. Chair. I one other question in the discussion. It talks about cables, pipelines, and so forth.
Conduits.
Where does that appear in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that's on the first page, line 8, 7 and 8.
Okay.
Yeah. If I may, the purpose of this was just to clarify the statute in one place refers to allowing cables and conduits to be permitted under the ocean shore. And it was determined by Legislative Council that you couldn't actually put them under the ocean shore without also crossing the state recreation area. So that's why that language was inserted.
I understand that. Thank you.
Okay. And can I ask one more question?
Yes, Representative Lim.
And
let me see.
And page two, biologists, wildlife monitor, and other natural resource workers. And I want to make sure when they go over there with a certain duties and responsibilities. That way, as it's written, if I claim I'm a biologist, he can go anywhere without having a certain duty to perform it. And there might be some loopholes in it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, our intent is the same as you have stated. It wouldn't be just for anybody who claimed to have a biological need, I guess, to access the beach with an ATV, but it would be for some specific stated purpose that was that would be determined to be valid, you know, when we issue the permit. And we would stipulate that as we adopted rules to manage this.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, I think might be good to ask you, Director Wood, to check in with Representative Garrard and suggest some language that might meet the needs that he was suggesting, and we'll bring this back probably early next week.
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to do that.
Very good. And I will close the work session. I don't believe there's any other business we have before us today, so seeing no hands, the committee is closed.
Yeah. 3 years.